So would y'all want to participate in a quick technology exercise? All right. So if anybody who has an iPhone, and if you don't have an iPhone, I don't know what to do. So that's another sign of the whole of what Apple's doing. So in your screen time, so if you go to your settings and go to screen time, we're gonna test out a theory real quick. All right. So if you pull out your phone and go to screen time, and then usually I think typically the normal settings is how much of time you have, how much of time you've used your phone. But go down and where it says show all data or show everything. And on the next screen, you should have a list of all the different apps, but you should see one for pickups. Does anybody see that? So if you at the bottom, underneath the hours, there should be like show other information or show all information or whatever. And in your list, there should be one for pickups. You see it? Does anybody see it? Okay. All right. Does anybody reach triple digits today? Close? Okay. All right. That's the first question. All right. So basically, your pickups is just how many times you picked up your phone today. All right. Since the beginning of today.
Do you have to look at it? I mean, is it just picking it up, or do you have to actually
turn it on?
Turn it on and look at it.
Yeah. I think typically when it's automatic, right? I mean, you pick it up, it automatically kind of flips on. But yes, I think it is as soon as you pick it up. And it recognizes your face ID or whatever, and the thing opens. I think that's considered one pickup, right? So whatever it is, I'm not interested in the content part. Okay, the content is one thing. That's not what I'm interested in. Okay, can you all remember what was the last time you picked up your phone for? Okay, can you remember the time before that? Thank you, Tim. But yes, before that. Before that? Or how about before that? How about the last 10 times? Can you remember what is the last 10 times you picked up your phone for? You can make a good guess. Based on what you've always used your phone for? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's the thing, all right? And we're going to start here. Is the video? Okay. Okay. All right, so here's the reason why I want you all to do that, all right? Part of us doing this, okay, is to help frame the issue as what we're not talking about, okay? So typically, whenever this conversation about technology comes around Christians, it usually comes into sort of the realm of the moral issues, okay? So I'm going to frame the topic by saying there are three things, and this should be on your handout as well. Like, what are the three things we're not talking about? Okay, so the first thing we're not talking about is we're not talking about social media. All right, so Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all that stuff. We're actually doing a third city forum in September. Scott's going to be leading that one, and it's all going to be about social media. So put that on your calendar, and we'll do that. We're going to treat that separately. Okay? All right? That's the first thing. The second thing is we're not as concerned, as important as it is, we're not primarily going to be addressing the moral issues around technology. All right? So, for example, internet porn, right? Those sort of issues and what you're going to do about it. It is important, okay? But I think that's, as it relates to what we're talking about today, that's a secondary. During the Q&A, if that comes up, we can talk about that. But we're more interested in a much more bigger question. Okay, so that's the second thing. All right, that we're not talking about. The third thing is we're not just talking about what to do about the kids and all the youth. All right, it's our problem. All right, so I know a lot of us are really concerned about our families and things like that, and we can talk about that during the Q&A as well. All right. But as we are going into this issue, we need to understand, and that's why the title of this talk and what we're going to be doing is called The Spiritual Formation in the Age of the iPhone, is to say that just our engagement with technology is doing something to you. It is forming you and me in particular ways outside of the moral issues, outside of just how we think about our kids and youth, right? That's important. And even outside of social media, all right? There's something more nuanced, I was going to use the word sinister, but then you're like, that sounds very conspiracy theory-ish. But there is something in terms of the way that sin works that we need to become more aware of. And I think this is what we want to talk about today. All right? So if you've got any other questions relating to that, we will come back to that the next time. All right? So are we going to have the video or not? Shall I skip that?
Yeah, for now.
Okay. Okay, all right. So, all right, we'll come back to the video and maybe we'll end with that, all right? But all right, so let me just say what we are going to be talking about, all right? So first we need to define it. So we're going to define what we're talking about when we talk about this. All right? Secondly, we are going to actually talk about the Christian worldview and technology, all right? What exactly we mean when we talk about that. Thirdly, we are going to look at one biblical case study. All right, because I think it's really fascinating, and it has to do with Noah's Ark and the Tower of Babel, as we talk about this. And I think as Christians, of course, Scripture is going to kind of govern what we're talking about. And then thirdly, we're going to look at three issues, which I've titled the three powers of technology. Okay, the power of technology in its convergence. Okay, that's the first one. Its liturgy, right, the practice of it. And then thirdly, it's mediating power. All right, and I'll describe what I mean when we talk about that as we go. Okay, and then we'll close out our time by sort of giving some sort of practical steps that you can think about it. What questions we need to ask, and then the rest of the time we'll facilitate the Q&A during our time here. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. Okay, all right. So we are all on the same page. All right. Okay. All right. So. Let's define what we talk about when we talk about technology, all right? So technology, the definition I have on there is something that we do or make, a technique to amplify human power, all right? That's a definition from Tony Ranke, which, in contrast, there's another definition by a computer scientist named Alan Kay, and he basically says technology is everything that happens after you're born, okay? All the rest is just stuff, all right? So, which is, I think, the way that we often think about technology, right? When we think about technology, we basically think about it as anything that happens after we're born, all right? Because everything else is just old. It's just stuff, all right? But going back to the earlier definition is to say that in some way, it's the technique, it's the making, all right? And the example that I have on there that I wanted kind of for you to consider is the story of David and Goliath in 1 Samuel 17, okay? So Tony Ranke, in his book, and this is where I'm drawing a lot of this material, and I'll go through some of the resources when we conclude today and highlight the ones that I think are probably the ones that are worth your time. Initially, all of those are worth your time in some ways, but I think we can sort of prioritize in that, all right? But Tony Ranke, in his book, God, Technology, and the Christian Life, he basically uses this example to talk about what we mean in terms of tech, okay? And he uses this example. He says, look, all right, you have the story of David and Goliath, right? And you have Goliath, who's basically armed to the teeth with what we would consider tech of his day in terms of weaponry, all right? So he's got all these things. David, on the other hand, is also armed, all right? He's armed with something, but it is something that he is able to wield, all right? So if you remember the story, we don't have time to look at it, but if you remember the story do you remember when Saul actually offers David his armor and his sword, right? And then David straps it on. He's not able to. And essentially what you've got in that story is David is now putting on Saul's armor, which is the armor that would be tech for tech would meet Goliath on the playing field. However, David was not able to wield that, all right? But now later on he will, okay? Later on he will. He will develop the skill. And if you read the rest of the Bible story, you know that you never hear about David using a slingshot ever again. All right? He uses it in that story, and then every time else in the rest of the story, he's got a sword. All right? He's fighting with a sword. So in some ways, what you have in that story is not just David being a technophobe, right? He's not saying, I'm just going to do the old way in that story. In other words, his skill grows in accordance with the technology that he's using. All right? And so So what Ranke says is in his book, and I think this is where we're sort of bringing this back. When we start thinking about this topic, a lot of times we often associate it with our capacity. All right, so that's why a lot of it is our great concern about our kids and our youth. All right, and so we say, well, they are too young to have a phone, and that is true. That might be true. All right, so in other words, we think when they are of certain age, they will have the capacity or the ability to have it. The question is, what skill do they need to have in order to wield that technology? Right. In other words, there needs to be something that needs to be imparted to them in order to wield that well. All right. And so it's not just about age. All right. Because if it's true for anything of us in this room, we lack the skill to handle it well. It's not a matter of age. All right. In other words, we need to develop some sort of skill on our part in order to handle our tech better. Right, so that's a good frame in order to think about this. There is some aspect of, and if you look at the definition, it has to do with amplifying human power. What has happened in our world is we have, rather than amplifying human power, it has begun to replace it. Essentially, and Andy Crouch, who's another writer that I would highly recommend in terms of that. He uses the distinction between how we think about technology in terms of an instrument or a device. Anybody want to hazard a guess between the difference between the two? What's the difference between an instrument and a device? This is small enough. We can ask the question.
Instrument is something that you use. Device maybe something that uses you.
Maybe. All right. Anything else? Any other stabs at a definition? An instrument entertains you? You mean like playing an instrument? Okay. Well, let's go back to that. It depends on who's playing it. Right? Anybody learning the violin in your house? Right? Or the drums? Right? Right? Noise cleansing headphones? Right? So look, in other words, when we think about an instrument, it calls for something from us. It requires something of us in order to wield an instrument. How much is called from you in order to handle a device? Very little, right? And I think that's the difference here. That the difference here is when we think about technology, we think about it in terms of devices rather than as an instrument, right? And you can think about it that you think about it the days when you read books where people talked about their phone as an instrument. Right? You picked up a phone, it was considered an instrument because why? Why did we call now and now we call it a device? No one called a phone that you had in your house, whatever how many years ago, a device. People called it an instrument. Right? So somewhere along the way, our language has shifted from talking about it as an instrument to a device. So the question is, what's changed? Right? So it's in some ways, those are the questions that we need to be asking as we talk about this topic. Okay? But our first way is to define it, and not in terms of age, in terms of time, because that's usually how we think about it, right? Newer is always better, right? And so essentially we leave things behind. I will say there's an interesting study. There's a book that I came across when I was preparing for this, and it's called Revenge of the Analog, right? And in that book, the author is David Sachs. He makes this point. He says it's interesting to note that there is a resurgence in these analog devices in which we think, right? So for example, right, vinyls come back. Right, but who is vinyl popular among in its resurgence? Young people, right? Right? Not you, most of you, right? Okay. So it's essentially the millennials and the Gen Z people who are really into the convenience part about it, right? We operate in that realm. Okay. So essentially, that's where we are. But young people, interesting enough, and the younger you are, right? We have kids in school lugging like these big old thick hardback Harry Potter books, right? They're not reading on a Kindle, right? They're reading in a book. Now that might be because you've said that's all you're going to get, right? However, there is a sense where when it comes to what we would consider ages of people where we think would be really into the analog, the digital, it's actually not. It's actually, there's a gap where that is actually coming back, right? Vinyl is coming back. Books are coming back. People thought bookstores would go out, right? They are making a comeback, all right? Barnes & Noble is like, right? So, I mean, all of these things are happening. And so there is a sense where we in our world, to just think about technology in terms of time is not enough, right? The book itself was a result of tech, right? Whenever the printing press was invented, all right? All right. So look, all of this is just for me to just frame this issue as we to talk about defining it, all right? So look, we're moving on, and I need to sort of knock these things out as we go because I really need to get some of the more cultural issues, which I think are where we, which is why I think most of y'all are here, all right? But we do need to sort of frame it from a Christian standpoint so that we have a good footing as we talk about this, okay? All right, so the Christian worldview, all right? So when we look at the Bible and we think about how do we talk about technology, we go back to the Genesis 1 text, and I think I have the text in your handout. And Genesis 1 basically has the text, the story that you have there is the story of what is the creation of man, all right? But in verses 26 and 27, you see that God makes man in his image, but then immediately after that, God actually says he blesses them, and then he says, go and make something of this world, all right? Now, that is unique in terms of what man, the creation of man. Man is the only one, right? Human beings are the only one who are made in order to make. So that's what sets us apart, all right? But notice what it says at the end in verses 28 and 29, right? So after 28, he gives them the cultural mandate, but then he says, everything I've given you, I've given to you for food, all right? And then he also says, and then to all the other living creatures, I'm giving every plant for food, right? So man is unique in the way that he's created to make, but he is not unique in the fact that he needs to consume, all right? So he is what we would say he is a contingent creature. He doesn't make in the same way that God makes. God makes out of nothing. We have to make out of something. God is not contingent upon anyone. We are. Therefore, that's why we need food to survive. All right? So, you know, all of that just simply says that there is a difference in the way that we make and the way God makes. But regardless, God says, you make. All right? And I've kind of used some words there, the key words that God uses in Genesis 1:28, where he says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue. All of those you can actually explain and sort of describe in what we would say of, remember, we talk about technology as making something. So in other words, when God says to extract the potential of something, all right? The iPhone, for example, consists of somewhere between 60 to 75 earth elements out of 118, all right? Which is pretty amazing, all right? In other words, what you carry in your pocket comes out of the ground in some ways, all right? Now, it goes through a lot before it actually gets into your pocket. But if you broke your phone down, it breaks down to about between 60 to 75 earth elements, all right, out of 118. That's decent, all right? I mean, that's more than half, all right, or close to more than half, right, if it's 75. So definitely more than half is 75. So in other words, when someone goes and extracts the potential out of something to create something, there is something good about that. Okay? And this is where I think where we are in terms of where we need to begin in terms of talking about this. We are so concerned with the badness of something, we forget that technology, making tech, making is part of the way that God has designed us and his creation to function, to be. Right? That's why we have to begin with by saying that technology is a creational good. It's part of God's common grace. Right? And if you notice, it's expansive. That it's not that, in other words, go and extract, be fruitful, multiply, fill, have dominion. Right? It's all this language that's out language. Right? And so if you think about it in that terms, we need to begin with that. However, and this is point four, there is also some constraints in terms of that. All right? So when we say that it has limits, that we are constrained, that is also part of our creaturehood, of being human. All right? Which is, of course, the part that I think if in today's world, this idea of living with limits is somehow thought to make us less human. And that limits are somehow not good, right? And sort of we begin with that posture. And in other words, what we're saying is that it takes away from our humanity to have limits. And the more and more limits that I can breach or I can break, I'm extending and becoming more and more human, right? And so we live sort of within this tension of how do we need to be expansive in the way that we think about the resources that God has given us, but at the same time, recognizing the limits of God's providential power over us, okay? So, but creationally speaking, that's what we need to begin there, all right? Let's move on to the fall, all right? So when we talk about the fall, we talk about alienation. I've often, and I think in Sunday school, I've used these way of thinking about it in terms of circles, but also in terms of a definition to say that alienation is using something for a purpose other than for which it was designed. All right, so what happens in the fall, right, and this is recorded in Genesis 3, what we have now in the way that we think about technology is really a reflection of what we think about God, how we think about ourselves, how we think about others, and our relation and the rest of the world. Okay, and if you put it, and if you use that way, that sort of rubric for thinking about our, when we think about the fall, what we're saying is that in some ways, how we think about God and how we think about tech has now become distorted, all right? And so that's why I have in your notes, what we're talking about today is to say that rather than thinking of God as being the one of God of providence, we are the ones who are in charge, all right? So we are the ones that we are. So rather than extending our human potential as part of living under God's providence, we think about it outside of that, all right? And therefore, rather than recognizing the God of creation, we see ourselves as self-evolving gods, all right? And technology is the way that we actually move forward, all right? So every time if you watch, you know, you might not be as geeky as I am, but if you ever watch the Apple, whenever they release a new product, one of the phrases that comes up over and over again, right, is they always talk about a giant leap forward, right? The more faster your processor, the better your screen, the better your camera, the better, the better, the better, the better. Every time is you're taking something, you're making it better. The thinner it is, the more battery it has, whatever it may be, in some ways you look at that and you say, that is better. Without ever asking the question, is it better? Why do I think it's better? And so, because that question is no longer, it's moot, okay? So whenever this idea of sort of moving forward is sort of placed on us, it's this, and that's the way that we often think of good, all right? Let me move on here. So that's the first one in terms of how it alienates from God. Secondly, in terms of how it alienates from ourselves, all right? If you go back to the creational mandate, we had a right view of what does it mean to be a creator and a consumer. That those things become distorted now, okay? So again, device, instrument, okay? Instrument calls for creativity. Device is often one of consumption, all right? So that's probably a good way of distinguishing that. And so whenever you think about a device in terms of that, whenever we start describing ourselves in terms of we turn on a phone and we are getting ready to use it, it becomes something, it begins of something that we are taking in rather than calling some form of output from us. Okay? So it distorts, it blurs that line. Thirdly, in terms of how it others, it blurs the line between being ourselves and being with others. We don't need to elaborate. I'm sure y'all are familiar with terms of all the issues with that, right? Even with our, you know, even the last 2 years of COVID, right? All of those things, there was something about it that, right, everybody got tired of the screen. But the question is, why were we tired of the screen? What was it that was tiring? There's a lot of things that made us tired, but in some ways, I think what happened was it blurred that line of what does it mean to be with people, right? In other words, we were with people, but yet at the same time, we were alone. And so therefore, that idea of that balance, that distortion of those things has kind of crept in on us and created all and a whole host of problems, all right? Now, we can talk about that later in terms of the virtual versus the real, VR, virtual reality, a lot of those things, right? There's a lot of that that's happening, of course, in our culture today. Everybody's developing VR glasses, creating these environments, which are awesome and wonderful. But the question is, what does that mean? What does that mean to be, what does it mean to actually, you know, because I'm strapping on glasses and I'm sitting by myself in there, but in this world, I am with a whole host of people, I'm doing all these things, experiences, those sort of things, okay? Fourthly, right, is how it alienates us from the world, right? And Ranke actually kind of makes this distinction in terms of that we start vacillating between technology utopianism and tech dystopianism, all right? And so what happens is we start looking at, you know, and some of you, I've only based on what I've read, all right? I don't see all these shows, but if any of you have seen the Netflix show Black Mirror, does anybody know what the reference to Black Mirror is? The blank screen, right? So essentially, the blank screen on your phone with nothing turned on, right, or your computer screen is basically the mirror, right? This black mirror, right? Which is this image that is that you are that kind of comes back at you. And right, and that whole show is sort of based on this dystopic idea, right? Most of a lot of movies are, and we have that, because this idea that technology has somehow taken over bothers us. And yet at the same time, we're intrigued by it. But when we're intrigued by it, it also fills us with terror. Right? Right? We like the control, but then also the fact that we are part of it, it terrifies us at the same time. All right? And so we vacillate between this idea of wanting more and more and making things better, and yet the more and more better we have of it, it actually makes us feel not great, right? And so most people imagine, right, it's almost like saying, we are in control, !! Right? That's utopia, right? We're in control, right? !! Right? That's dystopic, okay? So it's sort of, we have this, and we kind of go back and forth in terms of how we relate to the world, okay? All right, so that is how we think about this, right? So, but regardless of that, we need to be able to say that in some ways it has affected all of these dimensions, all of these spheres of our relationship with God, self, others, and the world. Okay? All right. The next slide should be a case study, and I think this is fascinating in terms of that. All right. So, the story that you have in the Bible is the story of Noah's Ark, and the Tower of Babel. All right. And I want you, and I think I've highlighted the word in here, hopefully you know enough of the story, but you know the story of the flood. And when the story of the flood, what you have is God is told, Noah is told by God to make an ark, all right? And he says, go make an ark. And then he says, coat it with pitch inside and out. And the word pitch is what we would consider the word tar, all right? It is an early form of what we would say of development in civilization, technology, if you will, right, in order to make things waterproof, All right, people say that it was developed probably by the Babylonians, and you know, at that time. All right, so regardless of what it was developed. Okay. Now, if you look at the story of, we'll stop there for a second. But if you look at the story of the Tower of Babel, and I think I have the verses up there in Genesis 11:3, it says, "Let us bake bricks thoroughly." All right, and then they said, he says, and they used bricks for stone, and tar for mortar. Okay, same word. All right, some translations use the word bitumen, but it's basically the same word. It's the word tar. Okay, so what you have in this story is you have two people building something, okay, and they're using the same material, all right, at least one of them, all right, and we often think about that the story of the Tower of Babel is something that happened way after. It's really not. It's actually happening pretty soon after the flood event, okay, after Noah comes out of the ark and all of those things. And so what I think you have in this story is you have two groups of people, right? One whom God is told, go and make, and they make, right? And I also have the verses. It basically says that, you know, it raises them up over the water, right? And then under the deluge of these of the waters from the sky, it basically it kills everybody else because everybody drowns. All right? So what you have is, and it says it rises over the mountains and rises up in the heavens, okay? But what you have in the story of the Tower of Babel is basically they want to make a tower into the heavens, all right? And what they're doing is essentially is they are making that tower waterproof, all right? They're basically trying to avoid getting drowning again, all right? And that's why they want to build something that goes all the way up. All right, and so what you have in this story is you have this contrast between, and again, Ranke in his book kind of is, you can almost picture it's them likely like standing on the tower with a fist up to the sky saying, what are you going to do now? Okay, what are you going to do now? I'm out of time here. Okay, all right, so what you have in this story is you have basically two people using technology as a point of contrast, both of them using it. But we would say one is building something, right, by God's design. And I left out those verses, but God goes into all of these things about how big it needs to be, how many rooms it needs to have, how high it needs to be, and all of those things. And then you have in the story of, in the Tower of Babel, where they are building something in order to escape from God's judgment. Okay? And of course, right, and so that's why when he says God in the flood, it is the rain that comes down. In the Genesis 11 text, God comes down, and that's that phrase that you have there, this idea of coming down. Okay, so I think that's a when we start thinking about this idea, we need to be able to say that there is some aspect of that what we're saying is we've got the tech itself is the same. Okay, the tech itself is the same. The purpose is the same, right? You're trying to be waterproof to avoid water. So we're not talking on the realm of technology itself. Is it good or bad, right? Tar is good, right? Makes things waterproof. We're not even talking about the purpose, right? We want to be waterproof. Great, okay. But in both these stories, what you have is you have a point of contrast where you have two things happening. And they are set at odds with one another, right? And one has to do with making a name for ourselves versus one that is living in accordance with God's design, okay? So regardless of that, I think that's a good sort of, because typically when we start talking about it, we think about it as a technology itself as bad, or we think about the purpose as bad. And in some ways, it's that yes, the purpose is bad, but much more in a larger scale rather than just the immediate purpose, right? So it's not just about the phone. It may be about the content, but it's not only about the content. It's not primarily about the content. There's something more going on that we need to be paying attention to. Okay, all right. So I don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to hit these three issues, and then we can talk about it during the Q&A. All right. All right, so firstly, the three issues that we want to call attention to as in terms of the powers associated with technology. All right, firstly It's what we would say is its convergent power. And this is the idea that we want more and more to be done with less and less. All right? So for example, if I gave you a hammer, it has one job. And it is if it does that one job well, we would consider it a good hammer. But if I gave you a phone and the only thing it can do is call and text, what kind of phone would you call it? Thank you, Sue. You would call it a dumb phone. You would call it a dumb phone, right? You don't call it a smartphone, all right? And so so essentially what we're looking for is we want more and more to be brought together. And so what happens is in the world of technology, there's a book called The Future is Faster Than You Think. And in the first chapter, they talk about this whole thing about flying cars, right? And talking about flying cars as being a reality, okay? That is coming. And one of the reasons that in the chapter, what they go through is they go through all of these developments that are converging, that are kind of coming together, that is about to make flight possible, whether it's Elon Musk and his electric cars, whether it has to do with materials that are developed for flying. You know, we're having lighter and lighter materials, whether it has to do with the needs that are, like in California, for example, you know, this idea of, right, it's a lot, you know, they talk about, you know, they're trying to build a train, you know, this fast train from San Francisco to Los Angeles. That's going to cost too much. It's cheaper to actually have a fleet of flying cars, right? So those sort of things are now converging that are sort of that. Now, the question is, how does this relate to us? Let me use one example, and as it relates to this, okay? And this has to do with reading your Bible on your phone, all right? Now, we'll talk about this later if that's something you want to talk about. And there's actually a book in your resource list a computer scientist turned professor, a seminary professor, John Dyer, who's actually written a whole book on this. It's called People of the Screen. And he's basically doing this study on how reading the Bible on a screen has affected the church. All right? And he's basically done a study on that. All right? And so it's a forthcoming book at the end of 2022. But I included it on there because I think that's an interesting topic to talk about. Now, the reason that a lot of times we don't talk about it is we say it's the same content. What's the difference between reading the same Bible that I have on my phone versus reading a print Bible? All right? Now, some of you may think, well, it has to do with being distracted. All right? If I have it on my phone, it's very distracting. And that might be true. That might be true. But distraction is an interesting idea. All right, because we always contrast it with being focused. All right, and it's interesting, and actually Ranke talks about this in his book 12 Ways Your Smartphone Is Changing You. He uses the example of the Good Samaritan, and he says in the Good Samaritan story, you have two men who were extremely focused. Right, they were right. You had the Levite. He said, I've got places to go. Right, I got to be there, right? In other words, it's not that he was unfocused. He was extremely focused. He actually needed to be distractible. His attention needed to be distractible up to a point to be called attention to the man on the side of the street who had just been beaten up by a bunch of robbers. All right. So a lot of times when we think about this, we often contrast this idea of saying, well, I just, you know, I'm trying to not be distracted. I'm trying to be really focused. And that could be an issue, but I think there's more going on here. And let me sort of maybe put it to you as a possibility. And I think it has to do going back to how we think about the sacred. Okay? So if you think of your Bible, right, the Bible has always had a prefix on it. It was always called Holy Bible, right? And the reason that we call it Holy Bible is in some ways there was something that was set apart about it, right? Not as a relic, right? Not as a religious artifact, but in terms of the fact that there was something unique and something different about the Bible that I read, Okay, because it is God's word. It is unlike any other book, because what the Bible says, God says. And because God is sacred, his word is sacred. Right? The question that I would like to raise is, does it do something to us if my Bible app is sitting among the common on my phone? Right? It's sitting next to my shopping app. It's sitting next to my Google Calendar. It's sitting next to my Slack channel, whatever. Right? Not that any of those are less important, but they do not rise to the level that I would consider it sacred. So is there a sort of a flattening or kind of flattening of the sacred in terms of how if I do in terms of desire for convergence? Because it's definitely more convenient than to carry my Bible than to carry it on my phone, no doubt. But, and I'm not even talking about distracted. You could be the most focused person in the world without meds, okay? And you could be that person, all right? That is not what we're talking about, okay? What we are talking about to say that is there sort of a flattening, a breaking of what we would consider the sacredness of what you are and I are engaging when we think about the Word of God. Okay, just a thought, but just as a way as we think about what is it convergence. All right, let me move on to this second issue. All right, technology's power of liturgy. James K. Smith, this is also in your resource. You Are What You Love, The Spiritual Power of Habit. In his other book, he has a more extended discussion on reimagining the kingdom, where he talks about how worship works, and he's got this whole chapter on the iPhoneization of us. All right. And he basically talks about the fact that you are engaged in a very embodied work when you're using your phone. All right? It calls for your hands. Right? And you are moving, you are swiping. Right? In other words, there's something very embodied about the way that you talk up that you would use your iPhone. Right, it's actually asking you for something. Okay, it's asking you for something rather than you drawing something out of it. Right, instrument device. Okay, so what happens? And he actually has a quote from Steve Jobs, the biography that came out in 2007 after Jobs' death, where basically he's saying, it is something that you can fondle, all right, in terms of that, okay? In other words, the whole Apple ecosystem is not just based on quality of the task, but also beauty, okay? So that it needed to be beautiful inside and out. It needed to, that when you touched it, it did something to you. And James K. Smith talks about these micro practices are shaping something from us. As you manipulate your phone, the question is it shaping a certain way that I think about the world? Okay? And so he calls this idea of liturgy, because you go through the same practices as it relates to, and I'm just using your phone, but we do it with all kinds of tech, we do the same things over and over again. All right? And so that over and over againness of our practices is that creating a sense of, is that shaping our desire, what we love, what we care about? And James K. Smith would say, absolutely, right? It's not that you love and you desire and you do, and that creates the desire, the love, okay? So second one, third one, and we'll end with this, and then we'll leave the rest for Q&A, all right? Sorry, I've gone a little bit over my time here. All right, but third one, all right? And it's this idea of that technology and its mediatorial power, that it mediates for us. And the reason, and the example that I think is interesting is, when you get your phone, the first thing you look for is a Wi-Fi signal, right? When you open your laptop in your coffee shop, the first thing you look for is a Wi-Fi signal. And when you don't get it, you are frustrated, right? Because the expectation of the fact that this device allows me to get beyond this moment, beyond this experience, into something else, is tantamount. It has to be, right? If your computer has no internet access, what do? Nothing, right? You don't do anything, right? Because you say, I can't use this, right? And that's true, right? If you have like one of those Google Books, whatever those right those books, those Android books, it cannot function without the internet, right? Because your Google Docs will not open, nothing works, right? In other words, you are entirely dependent on getting beyond, and you are looking for that you're always looking for that connection, right? And the way to think about it is to say that our screens, our technology is designed to mediate between us and the world. Okay, it's always the need for that, the desire for that, is built into us. Okay, it's never not away from that. All technology does is it offers itself to you to say, let me be the one that mediates for you, right? Let me be your way of getting beyond, of transcending, right? And so, and if you notice these three categories, there's a lot more that we can talk, but I picked these three because if you think about it, that all of these are not necessarily bad things, right? The fact that we are looking for integration. We want things to be together. We push against disintegration, right? There's something in us that looks, that longs for things to be put back together more and more. We want things to come back, right? And the fact that things are fragmented bothers us, right? Liturgy, right? We want, in some ways, we say we are shaped by our practices. Liturgy is related to worship, okay? And so what happens is, if I say you and I are created to worship, and worship is not just a posture, it's a practice, you would agree with me, because that's what we do when we gather every Sunday, right? It's not just about my attitude of worship. You and I engage in practices that actually relate to worship, okay? And thirdly, this idea of a mediator or mediatorial idea, right? That's a biblical word, right? So when we talk about creation mediating for us, the desire for a mediator, for someone who is able to do that well, is built into us. We are looking for that. The only difference is we've just swapped it out for something that basically says, I am as good or better or can do the same job. And what happens is when we give ourselves to it, we find out that it doesn't do that good job. Right? Something is not wrong. Something is wrong. Something is right. But then the rest of the world says, wait a minute, I'll make it better. Right? I'll make a better mediator for you. Right? And then we go through the process and everybody says, yes, let's give that another go. And then we go through it again. Right? So that idea of that promise is something that is sort of, we're always searching after. Okay? All right. So those are the three issues, and I'm going to stop there. And we'll, if we have time, we'll come back and talk about this idea of redemption. But I'm going to stop there, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll look at your questions. Sound good? All right, thank you.